Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jacob Heilbrunn, who is a senior editor at the National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times, a senior editor at the New Republic, and a Japan Society fellow. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jacob Heilbrunn.
Thanks, Ian.
And Chuck Hagel's fate seems to be in limbo. There's been a threatened filibuster by the minority chair of the Senate committee, Oklahoma Senator Jim Imhoff, who complains that, quoting Imhoff, the anti-Israel history of Chuck Hagel is real. We can't have someone at the Pentagon who has made these kind of statements. And McCain has sort of been both against him and for him and said that he wouldn't engage in a filibuster. And then he said he would, or indicated he would. Do you have any idea where it stands now? They're on recess, but presumably we'll know in about a week.
Yeah, they will try and drag it out as long as possible. The real aim is to weaken and bloody Hagel as much as possible before he assumes office. It still seems likely that it'll be confirmed, absent any bombshell in his record. But he is now in a position where he's a marked man.
So if this is about limiting his ability to govern, which is an old tactic, that's what the witch hunts against Clinton were about, how much does that affect a Secretary of Defense once he's in office? I mean, what more can they do to him?
They can wage a publicity campaign against him. They can monitor everything that he says and does, and not only scrutinize, but hype it. And they can call, and when he testifies before Congress, they can harass him as much as possible.
So in the hearings that took place, where, frankly, Hagel looked sort of tired, distracted, and wasn't particularly impressive, I guess. Nevertheless, the questions were pretty surreal. Israel was mentioned 178 times, according to an analysis by the Washington Post. Iran was mentioned 169 times, but there was barely any mention of Afghanistan, which is a place where the U.S. is currently actually at war, which you would think is relevant to the portfolio of the Secretary of Defense. And, you know, North Korea, again, wasn't mentioned. There are 30,000 U.S. troops there on a tripwire, and not to mention issues like sexual assault in the military, where one in three women in the military are sexually assaulted. What explains this? I mean, it's embarrassing that he wasn't being vetted to become the Secretary of Defense of the State of Israel, but the Secretary of Defense of the United States.
It's become pure theater. It's a sign of, really, of the decay of American democracy. It's not that dissimilar from the way we approach domestic politics, which is not to tackle the real issues, but to focus on small dramatic events. And the Israel has become a weapon with which to assail nominees for office. It's become a politically correct taboo that you can't utter even mild criticisms of Israel and expect to escape unpunished when you appear before Congress. And the Afghanistan, how do we deal with sequestration? That no one even talked about what will happen to the Pentagon if the sequestration goes through and the budget is cut. And that's an immediate problem that would confront Hagel, but no one raised it.
Again, I'm speaking with Jacob Heilbrunn, who is the senior editor at the National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for the Los Angeles Times, a senior editor at the New Republic, and a Japan Society fellow. So in terms of your book, They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons, there's not much doubt, Jacob Heilbrunn, that the neocons have been leading the charge against Chuck Hagel. And in many ways, at least to my mind, the neocons are essentially shills for the military-industrial complex, starting out with the so-called senator from Boeing and his aide, Richard Perle.
Henry M. Jackson.
Henry M. Jackson, of course, and his aide, Richard Perle, who is in many ways one of the sort of uber neocons. So if that's the case, is there a subtext here? Do the military contractors, are they using the neocons as a stalking horse because they don't like this guy because he may cut the budget?
You know, in my, I have a simpler explanation than that, which I think McCain gave. Remember, you noted that McCain gave different explanations at different times. But the real one that he gave the other day is that the Republicans in the Senate are mad at Chuck Hagel because he opposed the war in Iraq and he opposed the surge and he had the temerity to call George W. Bush one of the worst presidents since Herbert Hoover. And this is about a blood feud inside the Republican Party against someone who is perceived as a renegade from neoconservative orthodoxy. Chuck Hagel belongs to the traditional realist wing of the party, the Henry Kissinger, Richard Nixon, George Herbert Walker Bush wing of the party that does not believe in military adventurism abroad. To me, this is about a grudge match, about settling scores with Chuck Hagel because he strayed off the Republican reservation. And today you have a GOP in which you it resembles a cult more than a party. And that, and Hagel's offense was not to repeat the Republican liturgy about the Iraq war.
Well, so what's the Israel component? That's just ammunition?
It's another way to get at him. Well, the other issue that's going on here is that the neoconservatives and John McCain want to bomb Iran. Now, John McCain has wanted to bomb Iran for a decade. You remember he got in trouble when he started singing the song, Bomb, Bomb, Iran. And they fear that the duo of John Kerry and Chuck Hagel would present a huge obstacle inside the Obama administration towards pushing forward with an attack on Iran, and that this would hamper Israel. We know that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is eager to enlist the United States to attack Iran.
So the absurdity of this protracted nomination that may or may not be filibustered, but at least it's being held up, and you're saying that the real tactic here, or at least the subtext, is they just want to bloody Chuck Hagel to the point where his ability to be the next Secretary of Defense is diminished, and the hectoring will continue throughout his tenure. It's reached an absurd proportion because apparently some reporter for the New York Daily News joked to somebody in the conservative clique there that are involved in trying to torpedo Hagel. And he made a joke about Hagel belonging to a group called Friends of Hamas, a group that doesn't exist. And apparently, I think that even generated a letter from Lindsey Graham, did it not, to the White House?
Yes. I mean, but again, it's a sign of how susceptible the right is to conspiracy theories. Senator Ted Cruz, in my view, went even further by suggesting that Chuck Hagel has been receiving funds from North Korea and potentially terrorist groups, and insinuating that he won't disclose, that he's afraid to disclose the sources of his speech income. So we know the GOP, at least in foreign policy, has morphed back into its early 1950s incarnation when Joe McCarthy hurled these kind of charges. But I would say to Ian that the most absurd aspect of all of this, and I wager that even you couldn't have imagined this in 2004 or 2006, when the Iraq War was and widely seen as a disaster, that the neoconservatives would be dominating the foreign policy debate in Washington, D.C., at the beginning of the second term of Barack Obama's presidency.
So what explains that? I mean, in a way, I mean, I'm sure the White House told Hagel just to make nice and not to be confrontational, because he seemed to do everything he could during the hearings to sort of not pick a fight, even though they were trying to pick a fight with him. But if, for example, they'd given him other instructions like, why don't you stand your ground? Surely when all of these 178 times that Israel was brought up in the hearings, had Hagel said, you know, Israel's an important ally, but we actually don't have a mutual defense treaty with Israel, and it is only America's 24th largest trading partner, and no American troops are deployed on its territory. So, you know, as Secretary of Defense, there are other things that I should be concerned about. So perhaps we can talk about some of these issues. To my mind, that would have been a great thing for him to have said, but obviously it didn't happen.
No, and what he didn't do was, I wonder if he could have pulled a bit of an Oliver North, which is to attack the attackers. And, I mean, Chuck Hagel is quite conservative and does have a military record. I mean, he was being vilified and portrayed as a traitor by the Republicans. So I think, obviously, it was a difficult balance for him, but he was overly meek. It was, in that sense, I guess, reminiscent of Obama's first debate against Mitt Romney, where he just absorbed a brutal beating.
Well, again, do you think that there's a chance that he will... Are they just on the defense now, just hoping to get the votes and wheedling?
I would not preclude that the Republicans are intent on inventing new objections to Hagel. I would not, and James Inhofe is not someone who has been distinguished for at all times for rationality. He's also the leading anti-climate change senator. I think that they will try and invent and concoct in their laboratory more objections to Hagel and try and string this out as long as possible to create death by a thousand cuts. And if it doesn't happen, in a way, they've already gone along. They've won the battle against Hagel, even if they haven't won the war. I mean, the man has been severely wounded by this bruising confirmation process.
Well, but you could also make the argument that the Republicans have been severely wounded because, you know, the broader optics would indicate that the President Obama has reached out to be bipartisan and has chosen a Republican in his arguably one of his most important cabinet posts and, you know, makes the Republicans look crazy that they're beating up on a fellow Republican.
That is true. But the party at this point seems more interested in its own internecine battles than in reaching out to a broader public. They have been convulsed by hatreds, and they loathe Chuck Hagel. So they're somewhat indifferent to the political ramifications. But you know, this has been the Achilles heel of the GOP in recent years, of course.
Well, but
I agree with you. I mean, it does look bad.
Right.
But they don't seem to care.
Well, I think a couple of them have indicated they would vote for him. And I take it that what's going on now in this recess is that the White House is doing everything they can to convince some other Republicans. And they don't know whether they're going to be required to get the 60 votes. I think they were only two votes shy of 60, weren't they?
You know, what could really bollocks this up, too, is the whole sequestration. Because the battle lines between the White House and Congress are becoming deeper. We're further from bipartisanship than we've ever been. And both sides are really hardening their positions.
So are you suggesting, Jacob Halbron, that in wheeling and dealing behind the scenes to avoid a sequestration, because I think the adults in the room, which in this case is the White House, recognize that if you take a lot of money out of this faltering economy that's barely recovering, could even throw us back into another recession. Now, the Republicans are acting like the wrecking crew. They don't care because they're driven by this austerity ideology. And the sky is falling because of the debt. And I'm not sure whether they even believe that. But if just giving them the benefit of the doubt in terms of their ideology, is it possible that the president will be forced to make some compromise to avoid the economy being wrecked and, by extension, his second term?
I am not convinced that the Republicans are receptive to any kind of compromise, at least in the short term, that Obama can come up with. Their stance is that they've already raised taxes and they're not going to do it again. And given the Tea Party contingent in the GOP, I don't see a compromise emerging.
So what do you think will happen then in about a week's time when they come back from recess? Will Imhoff get his way and there'll be a filibuster, which could end up stalling the nomination indefinitely, or will, at least according to the last thing I heard from McCain, that he opposed a filibuster, will they just have a majority vote and the wounded candidate will assume his post, which obviously the outgoing Secretary of Defense, Panetta, wants to take a vacation.
Right. Well, there could well be a filibuster. That just can't be precluded in this political environment. And Inhofe is somewhat rabid on these subjects. And so I'm not convinced that Hagel is going to be confirmed anytime soon.
Jacob, you have had a piece in Sunday's New York Times about how the Republicans are trying to rehabilitate Calvin Coolidge, Silent Cal, often considered by most historians to be a disastrous president. What are they thinking?
They see him as the last president who slashed the size of the federal government and cut taxes for the wealthy. So they argue that liberal historians have engaged in a conspiracy to defame one of the greatest presidents in American history, someone who presided over a golden age during the 1920s, and that Coolidge's accomplishments were destroyed by the New Deal, by the expansion of government. Among the admirers of Coolidge are Paul Ryan, Michelle Bachmann, and a host of other Republican intellectuals, the Wall Street Journal editorial page. They all see Coolidge as someone who should be venerated and that we should follow his example today.
So I guess there's a historical amnesia about what followed Coolidge, which was Hoover and the Great Depression.
Well, they argue that it was a mere economic recession that was converted into a long-lasting depression by Roosevelt and to some extent Herbert Hoover engaging in big government programs, that if we just let the economy sort itself out, everything would have been fine and dandy, just as they argue today against the Troubled Assets Relief Program. If George W. Bush and Barack Obama had simply done nothing, everything would have been hunky-dory in 2008.
Oh, well, I don't know what to say. I guess facts don't, and history and data doesn't matter in this current age.
Well, we've strayed into an economic twilight zone, but unfortunately, that is what the GOP is engaging in today as well with the sequestration. They are absolutely adamant that there should be no higher taxes on the wealthy, and not even closing tax loopholes. And instead, we need to slash the size of government.
Well, Jacob Halbrun, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Again, I've been speaking with Jacob Halbrun, who is a senior editor at The National Interest and the author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. Previously, he was an editorial writer for The Los Angeles Times, a senior editor at The New Republic, and a Japan Society Fellow. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.